Warning, this episode of Neo Bohemia contains a little more explicit language than usual. I interviewed a drag queen, so what would you expect? Listener discretion is advised. Enjoy! Hello and welcome to Neo Bohemia. I'm your host, Charlie Layton. Today we're talking about glamour and beauty and how it relates to charm and the performance of beauty and glamour. And I have a very special guest named Pixel.
Hi.
Thanks for coming on the show, Pixel.
Of course. How are you?
I'm great. I'm glad to talk to Pixel because Pixel is a very diverse type of performer. Pixel is a dancer. Pixel sometimes is a drag queen.
Yeah.
Pixel is an aerialist sometimes.
Yeah.
So what would you describe what you do?
Well, I guess like everything that I do does meet at the intersection of drag. Mm-hmm. And I do drag as my main medium of performance. One, because I wanted the ultimate freedom of a performer. And I think drag offers me that ultimate freedom. I think it kind of came out of, someone said this, I forget what artist said it, but they said, this is what I would be doing in front of my bedroom mirror anyway. I would be in the shower singing these songs or in my bedroom mirror dancing and singing. And I think like I would record myself performing Chicago, you know, the musical Chicago.
Yeah.
And kind of like all these silly little dance performances, singing Madonna, singing Britney Spears, and feeling like a showgirl, feeling like a celebrity, a superstar. And I was like, with drag, it's like you can do all of those things and perform in front of people and kind of like have the freedom to be and do whatever you want. So that's kind of like
awesome. Yeah. How young were you when you decided you wanted to do performance?
I was in college and I was 21 years old or 20 years old. And I had seen a drag queen on Facebook promoting her shows. And I was like, that's a career. People do that for money. I was like, I can do that.
And you got into it.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I most recently saw Pixel perform at the Mermaid Lagoon at the House of Yes last weekend. Mm-hmm. I was performing with Ben Cerf in the band Skullbuggery. We were pirates. It's our old pirate band. But the Mermaid Lagoon is a charity benefit to help refurbish the oyster beds of East River, Hudson River.
Yeah.
And Pixel was the orca whale, Lolita, mm-hmm. metaphorically or symbolically or actually.
I don't know. All the things.
Yes. Suspended in a cage at House of Yes. And it was very, very stunning.
Yeah.
And I love your aesthetic because you are able to push the boundaries of what we would consider performative beauty,
mm-hmm.
in a way. But but Pixel embodied an orca whale with, mm-hmm. like, the white ovals.
Yeah, I mean, like, I kind of looked really weird and scary because I had those, like, dark sclera lenses and my eyes were blacked out and my skin is painted black and white and I almost look like an alien. And, I mean, it makes people uncomfortable, but I think that's part of what's beautiful about it is that they're uncomfortable, but then when you perform that weird, strange alien character with the grace and beauty of, like, a dancer, then it's like, is it beautiful? Is it strange and weird? And then it gets people thinking, like, who am I? What am I doing? Like, those deeper, more interesting questions.
Yeah. I appreciate how much you are able to find profundity and beauty in what would be deemed more ugly or more, mm-hmm. less mainstream beauty.
I mean, I think that's why I have trouble kind of identifying as a drag queen because, like, I do perform, like, as a contemporary showgirl a lot, but I think in deeper within me, I like being really strange and weird and dark and making that beautiful. And so I'm kind of at this crossroads right now where I have, like, these two characters. I identify as Pixel and my main performer name is Pixel, but then I also have this other character named Destructa, who's like this darker, witchier character. And so I'm trying to find that intersection of like those two characters.
Ooh, Destructa.
Yeah, Destructa. Yeah. She's kind of just like a take no shit, no holds bar kind of girl.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have any dream roles or costumes or ideas? You have Destructa coming up.
Yeah. Well, I've been playing a clown in this group called Fufuha, And that's kind of like the more happier, funnier side of drag, and more absurdist side of drag. I might be playing as the main character from Moulin Rouge, the girl, Satine. I might be playing Satine in Little Cinema at House of Yes.
Awesome.
In October.
And what are some of your favorite characters you've ever performed?
I mean, Lolita the Orca was really fun and really beautiful and really put myself out of my comfort zone. Performing to Kai Altair's beautiful witchy voice on Silks was another favorite thing that I've done.
Cool.
At House of Yes.
So you do dance and aerial as well.
Yeah.
What is your dance background? What do you like to dance?
I kind of had like modern dance I like voguing. Voguing was a really big dance form that inspired me. And I started in ballet when I was younger. I did that for a year in high school.
Where do you get your inspiration for costume and makeup?
Musical theater and like acting were my kind of like entryway into costumes and makeup. And I was really obsessed with the movie Chicago when I was really younger. The Cell Block Tango was a huge inspiration to me. Roxy's performance of the song Roxy in Chicago was a huge inspiration to me. And I Can't Do It Alone. And all these songs from Chicago. And then I've been a huge video game nerd all my life. And through video games, I've seen all these really strong female characters. There's Blood Rain, who is a Nazi-killing vampire.
Yeah.
There's a Catwoman, who's not necessarily... She's, like, more comic book. Mm-hmm. But she was an inspiration to me. The Femme Fatale has always been a huge inspiration to me. So just, like, strong women have always been really inspiring to me.
So you were pulled from inspiration from video games, like Blood Rain.
Yeah.
If Pixel was a video game character, what game would she be playing? What's her secret weapon? What is her secret power? Versus Destructa.
Yeah. Well, Pixel, there's actually this really amazing game. It's a fucking shit game. It's a fucking terrible game. It's repetitive. It's not that the storyline isn't that great, but the concept is amazing. There's a game called Lollipop Chainsaw.
Lollipop Chainsaw.
And it's about a cheerleader who fights zombies. And she does backflips and splits, but she has a chainsaw and she's like slicing zombies up. And I think that's kind of really the epitome of Pixel, is like she's this like bubbly, fun, sweet character who fights zombies.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. I love that game. Oh my god, I haven't played that in so long. That's so great.
And what about Destructa?
Destructa's more of like the Blood Rain kind of like Catwoman, like dark femme fatale kind of character.
Cool.
So they're both kind of like fighting, take no shit, kind of strong female characters. But Pixel's a cheerleader and she's like bubbly and happy and That's she does great. It in like a really positive way. But she's also a sassy cunt at the same time. Because it's necessary.
Totally.
To really kind of get through the bullshit.
Do you ever pull inspiration from villainesses or villains?
Not directly, but I do love villains. I love Maleficent.
Ursula the Sea Witch?
No, I mean, I've been Ursula.
You performed Ursula.
I've performed as Ursula. Yes. Yeah, we had Sarah Zepazower's show as... Have you talked to her on your podcast?
I haven't yet.
She'd be an interesting person to talk to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But Sarah Zepazower did her rendition of The Little Mermaid as a kind of a Cirque du Soleil type of show. And... I was Ursula the Sea Witch, and I think I was inspired by someone else's vision, and they had asked me to be Ursula the Sea Witch, but I've always loved witches, like the aesthetic of the witch and magic, and when I was younger, I was really into witchcraft and Wicca and casting spells, and I was a little goth, I was a mixed gay goth boy in high school, and I think like that weirdness kind of trickles into like my drag too.
How long have you done drag?
Professionally for 2.5 years, but I had been playing with it for... The first time I did drag, I was in high school, and my friend had like a wig, and I just put it on and put some makeup on, and we went to this gas station near us in, like, Podunk, Monticello, New York, which is 2 hours upstate amongst cows and trees and farms. And this person was like, wow, you guys look really fun. Where are you going? And we're like, we're going to a rave. And meanwhile, we were just getting milk and, like, going home. We were in high school and there were no raves near us. So I had been playing with it around that time, but I've been doing it professionally for 2.5 years and doing it a lot in college. And
cool.
Yeah.
How often do you get to host a show?
Lately, I've been hosting more often. I might host a college soon in April. I forget what college it is. I have this show upcoming called The Bitchcraft Ball.
Ooh.
and I might... Well... You know Veronica Varlo?
Veronica?
Varlo.
Varlo.
Yeah. She's, like, super beautiful, like, burlesque, like, black hair, red lipstick, like, very classic burlesque. She has, like, an hourglass frame. But she might end up hosting the Bitchcraft Ball, but I was going to end up hosting that. But I've kind of given up my hosting stuff, but I've been told lately that I'm really good at hosting.
Yes.
So I feel like I should get back into it.
It's something that I enjoy. You're just a natural.
Yeah. I should. I do host monthly Blaine's show, Filthy Pony. Do you know Blaine Petrovia, the pole dancer?
I don't.
Okay. He's really good. And Filthy Pony you probably really like.
Oh, I've probably seen Blaine.
Yes. Well, did he do the brothel ever? Did he?
Did he perform at your show at House of Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
I've yes. Seen. But I ended up hosting his show monthly, and I really have been enjoying that. I should host more. Yeah. It's nerve-wracking, but I should do it more.
So you're going to submit to RuPaul's Drag Race as well?
Yes. Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah. Everyone listening, send good vibes.
Please. I need it.
That's great. It's an amazing show.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great representation of how drag is converging onto mainstream,
mm-hmm.
Giving opportunities for visibility on the national.
It's one of VH1's most popular shows.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Cool. What about your costumes? Do you make all of your costumes?
Not all of my costumes. Some of them I make. I have a fashion brand called Pixel Skin that I kind of like recently launched a few months ago. I just recently learned how to sew, but it doesn't look like I just learned. They look amazing. but I make a lot of spandex fashions, like booty shorts and tights and crop tops and gloves and stuff like that. And kind of like Pixel's kind of style is really reflected in Pixel Skin. It's all iridescent and sparkly and bright colors. You have pinks and blues and greens, all really bright. And so I don't make all of my costumes, but a lot of my costume inspiration is reflected in my Pixel Skin brand.
And you do your own makeup as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's par for the course for any drag queen.
Yeah.
And you get, so with that in mind, you find you just get better and better at just doing what looks best for you.
Well, makeup does two things, interestingly. When you start your, if you're doing a face in like, say you do a 2 hour face, the first 30 minutes of your face looks fucking terrible. Always. When you watch any like makeup tutorial, before it's all blended together, your face looks terrible. So if you're really interested in getting into makeup and you start doing your makeup, looks really terrible, you're going to look terrible. That's a part of the process. That's okay. And then at the end of the day, when you start makeup, you're going to look fucking terrible. Okay. yes, it's been like a building block. It's been like years. It's taking me at least these 2.5 years of me doing it professionally to realize that in the beginning of my years, when I thought I looked fucking beautiful, I looked like trash. And now I look better than ever, but I still have a long way to go.
Yeah, it's a real skill.
Yeah, it takes a really long time.
I can't imagine the budget for makeup.
Oh, God, yeah.
The good
drag
stuff.
Queens. Yeah, I mean, something you can do to kind of, like, a cheaper way to do makeup is they have these things called flash palettes, and they make them in, like, they're what body painters use.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, like, pink, blue, yellow, green. They have like all the colors of the rainbow, and kind of body painters and also theater, Broadway or like stage makeup artists use it. Mm-hmm. And you can put that on your face and blend it instead of going to like, you know, Sephora or MAC and buying like a specific palette for every specific type of look you do. So most times, you know, I'm kind of like maybe a DIY queen or a trash queen, and I kind of, you know, I'll take this palette and I'll paint my face with each color, and then I'll blend it out, and then I'll just take a, you know, a dollar store palette of all kinds of different colors of eyeshadow, and then I just put the eyeshadow on top of it. So there are kind of cheaper ways to do makeup, and you can still look really beautiful. And if you want to know what I look like, it's on my Instagram. But
and we will provide a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, but it is really expensive. Drag is really expensive. And, you know, burlesque performers, too, and drag performers have it really hard.
Yeah.
And there are actually two performance mediums that kind of spend the most money and get paid the least. All drag queens get paid shit when they start.
Yeah.
And if you build a name for yourself by doing all of these free pageants, free gigs, and you've got the talent and you really push through, you might get $50 to $100, and then, you know, that, and you'll get a lot of gigs that way. And then you hope and you pray that you start getting $100 to $200 gigs. And then you pray to Jesus that you really get those $500 gigs. But that's rare. You gotta be backed by a corporate entity. But yeah, it's unfortunate that these are two of the kind of like most expensive performance careers.
Yeah.
And they get paid the least.
It's so much upkeep. Yeah. But I guess that challenges you to do the DIY.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can't just outsource it and try to pay other people. You have to really work on it yourself. Learn to sew. And...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know a lot of... I mean, those are like the queens I respect the most who like make all of their stuff and do their makeup and, you know, are really self-made. And that's what kind of RuPaul's Drag Race really kind of pushes, is you have to be able to make your own costumes. You have to be able to do your own makeup. You have to be able to write your own scripts. You have to be able to write your own commercials. You have to be able to brand yourself. I mean, that's the challenges that they put you through, is you have to be able to make and do everything. And that's why I want to be in RuPaul's Drag Race, because I feel like I do have that talent to be able to create myself fully. And so that's why I really want to be on the show.
Yeah.
To prove myself.
DIY is so important for young artists, because at some point you can't wait for the opportunities to just come to you. You have to start creating them. You have to start writing your act.
Yeah.
You have to start choreographing yourself.
Yeah.
And you have to start, you know, you have to create your own show.
Yeah.
And hopefully work with your friends who will let you use their spaces.
And I would say, like, don't even wait till, like, once you graduate college or whatever, don't wait for anyone to give you the opportunity to do anything. Like, just do it yourself.
Right.
Like, just immediately, as soon as you have the idea, write it down and do it. And someone will work with you. Someone will want to do it with you. Yeah. You have friends. Hopefully you have friends.
Do you have any other lingering advice for impressionable, young, up-and-coming, dreaming drag queens?
Work with your friends. Make it happen. Do it immediately. Believe in yourself. Tell your local bar that you are the best thing that will happen to them, that you will bring in all the sales, that you will bring in all the patrons, and just do it. Do it immediately. And make your stuff out of dollar store stuff. Go to the dollar beauty supply store. Use all of that stuff. You don't need anything expensive. And keep doing it until you're there, until you're where you want to be.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for listening. Normally, this is where I pledge for donations, and my GoFundMe link is still provided in the information of this podcast. But now I would like to pledge for your social currency, meaning if you could please share this episode with some friends, or if you want to write a review on iTunes, that would be great. If you want to contact me directly with questions, suggestions, you can visit the Neo Bohemia Facebook page and write a message there. Thanks again, and now back to our program. What would you say are some of the least glamorous parts of the work you do?
Tucking your dick and making it into a vagina is probably one of the least glamorous things.
Can't have that bulge.
No, you cannot. You cannot.
Unless you want
that. You can, unless that's your aesthetic. Yeah. I've seen drag queens with dicks. It's a thing. Yeah. Actually, you have Rosewood at the Box. Do you know Rosewood of the Box?
Rosewood at the Box, yeah. Is a performer. Yeah.
Who, like, you know, takes a shit on stage and takes things out of her asshole, puts things up her asshole. That's an aesthetic. That's a great aesthetic.
Glamour.
Glamour. Yeah, I mean, like, honestly, I mean, talking about glamour, I guess, like, if we want to get back to this main topic of glamour, glamour, for me, is whatever you make it. And I think, like, Rosewood is glamorous in a really unglamorous way. We don't think about glamour as taking a shit on stage. But she does this really genius act where she is Anna Wintour. And she's Anna Wintour, and she goes into a bathroom, and she goes to the toilet, and she takes a shit, and she realizes she has no toilet paper, so she has a bunch of Vogue magazines, and ooh, she rips the Vogue magazines apart and shits all over them, and then, like, flushes it down the toilet, and then gets all pretty and neat, and then, you know, goes off on her, you know, to go to her editor's meeting or whatever. And,
how, what a statement.
Yeah, I mean, like, Anna Wintour presents herself as this glamorous, high fashion, you know, no one can touch her, but she shits just like all of us.
Right, but does she wipe her ass with the pages of Vogue?
I mean, probably. Probably. She probably has diamond-encrusted toilet paper to wipe her ass with.
Oh my goodness.
But she shits nonetheless.
Yeah.
But I think, like, the Box is actually an incredibly glamorous place. It's in Soho, and it's near the Financial District. And a lot of, like, very rich businessmen go there. It's kind of like the Moulin Rouge of New York City. And
low art presented as high art.
Yes.
Postmodernism.
Yes. Yeah.
Ugliness is beauty.
Yes.
There is, I mean, similar to what I see in you is that mm-hmm. awesome transformation of the thing that you're not supposed to think is beautiful suddenly mm-hmm. is, because of the charisma and the energy you put behind it,
mm-hmm.
that it's captivating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like that aesthetic. It's hard to find that sometimes because it's not very mainstream, mm-hmm. or when it is mainstream, it's been too glossed over.
Yeah. Or it's been presented in a very pretty, perfect way, and yeah. it doesn't, you know, and you have a lot of, like, glamorous, unglamorous performers. Like, Sharon Needles is a drag queen who was very unglamorous. She did this look on RuPaul's Drag Race where it was, like, the challenge was to be post-apocalyptic.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's kind of interpretation of that was, oh, I'm going to be glamorous in the post-apocalypse, and, like, I'm going to find all this trash and make it into high fashion. But she was like, I'm a zombie in the apocalypse, and the radiation has got to me. And so she walked on the stage as, like, a decrepit zombie and, like, had these fucked up eyes and, like, blood spewed out of her mouth.
Mm.
And she won RuPaul's Drag Race because it was, like, presented in a... I mean, it was presented in kind of a glamorous way, but it also was just, like, a I-don't-give-a-fuck kind of attitude and was thinking about things originally. And I think, like, for me, that's what... That's what's really important for me, and that's what maybe sometimes I'm not as mainstream as I would like to be, because I always want to be original, and so sometimes that turns into obscurism or, like,
mm-hmm.
kind of fringe performance, because people don't know the music you're doing, people don't know the references you're making. I don't have a lot of references because I always try to just mash up random things that I just kind of come into in my present life and make that into art, other than, like, being like, oh, what's a popular thing that people are gonna all know that can just, you know, that. And because I don't want pop to carry me, you know,
right.
to just...
Speaking of non-mainstream music and culture to incorporate into your act, you perform a piece called Reclaiming My Time,
mm-hmm.
which is a remix of the audio of Representative Maxine Waters
mm-hmm.
when she says, I'm reclaiming my time.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get to see the piece, but I've actually heard about it from mm-hmm. other people who are so amazed.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that like for you?
Well, Maxine Waters is kind of, she's really standing against what Trump is for, which is like selling our government to, you know, businesses. And there was a question about legislation and whether banks should report if they see financial transactions between a political party and, you know, Russia or any, you know, foreign agent or any, if they see any suspicious activity in someone's account, specifically, you know, Donald Trump, if that bank has a responsibility to report that to the government or to a law enforcement official. And so she keeps asking this head of financial advisor or someone who was on Trump's cabinet and is like, does a bank have a legal responsibility to report that offense or that activity? And he's like, well, we were going to respond to your letter, but we didn't get around to it. And also, and she's like, no. The question is, does banks have a legal responsibility? Well, you know, there's this other thing. And she's like, no, reclaiming my time. Answer the question. Answer it. And it's such a moment of empowerment and a moment of no bullshit in the world of like so much bullshit. I mean, everything that Trump is saying and everything that's happening in government right now, it's just all talk and nothing. If you really listen to the things he says and you research the things he says, it's all based on the people's, these really religious people's faith in God. And, you know, because he's pro-life and he's anti-gay rights, and these are things that people in, you know, the South and in the Midwestern states are really, really passionate about. And he's using that to fuel the flame. And also you have immigration rights and racism, and he's really fueling those fires to get a really strong following. And but, you know, some people are realizing that he doesn't even have those people's backs. At the end of the day, he has these like really rich corporations in his mind. But Reclaiming My Time is really an ode to, you know, not taking any bullshit and
cutting through it.
Yeah. And
get back to answer the question.
Yeah.
Some sort of concrete.
Yeah. Answer. And Maxine Waters is black and she's on the House of Representatives. So she's faced a lot of adversity, I think is the right term. And I think that performance is, you know, important for all those reasons.
That's great.
Yeah.
And it's such a strange and unique and unexpected source to make a drag queen lip sync performance.
Yeah. Well, because it's interesting. I mean, it kind of comes from internet culture. And I think, like, that's where my inspiration comes from as a millennial, is I get a lot of my inspiration from the internet and seeing a lot of, you know, we're bombarded with information nowadays. And mm-hmm. It's so easy to get distracted. And so a lot of my art comes from the distraction, or even just not even the distraction, but from what really just inspires me in the moment. And this music artist made this really great remix to Maxine Waters. The moment of Reclaiming My Time is actually just not a speech, but is a dialogue between her and this financial advisor. And
and who's the remix artist for the
Adam Joseph. And Adam Joseph took the dialogue and made like a dance remix to it. And I was just like, oh my God, this is so lit. Like, this is so, like, I can actually dance to this. This is really funny. And it would be so funny to see a drag queen do this number. And
and then in the process, learn some more about politics.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of my stuff is really political, and everything I do is political in itself. I mean, that's also why I kind of want to use drag as like my main medium of performance, is because there's a war against effeminate men nowadays, and that's kind of where a lot of my work comes from too, is, you know, I believe that men should be able to be soft and sensitive and kind and loving, and in public and also privately. And I think, like, I'm not only standing up for the effeminate gay man with my work, but also the effeminate heterosexual male. And so I think, like, if anything, I think that's like one of my most important kind of like missions in life is to fight for the soft male and soft, well, soft male in general, but also gay men who are effeminate, because very strong masculine gay men are celebrated nowadays. You have Milo Yiannopoulos, who's like kind of a very, he's a Trump supporter. He, I think, is part of the organization Twinks for Trump. I might have that wrong, but there is a thing called Twinks for Trump. And if you don't know what a twink is, it's a very small framed young gay man. But he's masculine, and that kind of person is celebrated, but whereas like effeminate gay men and effeminate straight men are celebrated.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other ideas you think regarding drag as a political statement?
I mean, I just think that performing drag as your medium is just important because it creates queer visibility, and it just gets people thinking about gender differently and the human form differently, and it gets people thinking beyond. I mean, drag acknowledges that everything we wear and everything we do in our daily life is kind of like an expression of drag. Drag acknowledges that when you go out in a suit and tie every day, you're connoting a specific type of symbol for people to see as to who you are. And so drag says you can dress yourself up in anything and become that thing, you know.
RuPaul is quoted as saying, "You're born naked and the rest is just drag."
Yeah.
So it's any sort of performance of gender,
yeah,
hetero, homosexual, male, female,
is drag.
Yeah, that's interesting to see that we could cross the lines or blur the lines.
Yeah,
and we're in a very interesting political time to see visibility of trans rights, queer rights, new identifications all the time.
Yeah. I was working on this project, where I, you know, you go into the subway and you hear Showtime, Showtime, and Showtime. And I was like, well, what if someone heard Showtime and a drag queen performed on the subway?
Ooh.
And so that's kind of another thing that I've been thinking about doing, is kind of doing more, public displays of drag and, getting it out there more.
Like street theater.
Yeah.
Activism.
Yeah. Yeah. Street activism.
Well, thank you, Pixel, for coming on to the podcast. Thanks so much for coming on. This was Pixel, drag queen, performer, dancer, aerialist, and I'm Charlie Layton, and this was Neo Bohemia. Thanks everyone for listening.
And you can catch me at Pixel Chick Adventures on Instagram. I'm also Pixel Chick on Facebook. And come see a show of mine anytime. Hacias, and catch me online.
Thanks.
Thanks, Charlie.
Let me just say to you, thank you for your compliments about how great I am, but I don't want to waste my time on me. I want to know about the May 23rd letter. You know about it? Why did he not respond to me in my college?
I was going to answer that.
Just go straight to
and
the answer.
Mr. Chairman, I thought when you read the rules, you acknowledged that I shouldn't be interrupted and that I would have...
Reclaiming my time. What he failed to tell you was, when you're on my time, I can reclaim it. He left that out, so I'm reclaiming my time, please. Will you respond to the question of why I did not get a response from my colleagues to the May 23rd letter?
Well, I was going to tell you my response.
Just tell me.
Okay, so first of all, okay, let me just say that the Department of Treasury has cooperated extensive House
reclaiming my time.
With the Senate
my time.
Judiciary.
Reclaiming my time.
Okay.
Reclaiming
matter of fact,
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 my time. Would you please explain the rules and do not take that away from my time? Do not take that away from my time. Reclaiming my time. Reclaiming my time. Thank you very much. You left a message yesterday of someone.